This is our year, guys. I can feel it. Last year was humbling, but that was last year. This is a new year. We got veterans. We got toughness, mental fortitude. We can't be bullied anymore. So all aboard for the playoff redemption tour. Choo-choo!
When our team went down to Orlando, the Magic were in a 2-0 hole.
Looking good!
Now here we are, the series all tied up.
Damn it!
My redemption hopes look like they might die, and yet even worse.
I tried to tell you about Mobley, my guy.
Shut up!
Please, not this again. You're going to make me cry.
Say it with me. Reprehensible.
Oh, fuck off!
So make threes or even twos.
I'd take one.
Do what you've been paid to do.
Score!
Anyone but Fro, they need to thrive.
Who takes the fall for this in Cleveland?
Don't care who is to blame. I just can't lose this way again.
I just don't like what I'm watching.
Please, God, just try to score.
Cleveland has to trade Mitchell this summer. And it's like in all caps and bold.
People like to say,
you know what this is?
This is a rock fight.
Well, I'm begging you, respond tonight. If we hit the road trailing 3-2, just kick in my teeth with a steel-toed boot. If I see one more net ratings post telling me which guy they suck the most, I will contemplate if I should end my life.
Obviously, the answer is a resounding yes.
So Donnie D. Or Sam, Evan, Max, or Minivan, put it through the net, you fucking dolts.
How is Derek Favors doing right now?
Fear the frozen apt name, the only guy who came to play.
Thank you, Bob.
And I'm your sad boy host.
Welcome into the Fear the Fro podcast, a somber day on the Fear the Fro podcast, tied up 2-2. The last time we spoke, things were good. My, how just one short week can change things. Now, I had a jam-packed week last week preparing for the Mrs. Fro baby shower, which took place on Saturday. I was riding high most of the week. I spread many, many yards worth of mulch, which, you know, I'm not a real man, so that's an accomplishment to me. Toting a wheelbarrow around my yard and spreading mulch. I felt like this is what it must feel like to be a self-sufficient man who can do stuff and not just pay other people to provide all your labor. Now, sure, I had to borrow a wheelbarrow. That's how little of a man I am, but my father-in-law stepped up. But bear with me on this. See, I like to think on weeks that I go above and beyond in my marital responsibilities that I will be paid back in kind with sports triumph. And at least initially, I was. And it seemed as if, especially with Jared Allen, many of the critiques of last year about our lack of toughness and fight, they were things of the past. We fought back. When they put on runs, we responded. It was looking good. But I'm wondering if perhaps I pushed my luck too far. Now, anyone who knows the Fro podcast knows I love nothing more than a good victory lap. And to go up 2-0 and to not hear a peep from me was probably insulting to the same basketball gods who were rewarding me for my mulch lane. Now, the first two wins, they weren't perfect. The offense left some things to be desired, but at the end of the day, the Cavaliers, albeit poor offensively, were stifling defensively, and Jared Allen proving over the course of this series to be the most impactful Cavalier in this playoffs. Let's start there, shall we? That is quite the turn of events. After the season ended last year, all I heard was about how we had to jettison Jared Allen for whatever serviceable stretch four that we could get.
Even for me, the lights were brighter than expected.
And this year, just a year later, he's nearly doubled his playoff output and is clearly the only Cavalier that you can point to as being someone who has showed up game in and game out for this team. Just consider this. Last season, single digits, 9 points, 7 boards. This year, 17 and 14. And he leads the Cavaliers in free throw attempts, nearly 7 a game. Last season, that was just 1 in the playoffs. So Jared Allen, a resounding success story, and that is perhaps what makes everything that surrounds him all the crueler. Because if you told me, with no other details, that Jared Allen would be doing what he's doing, I would think, oh man, we're cruising this round. But then you take a look at the rest of the starting lineup and literally,
oh God, no!
Every single player is managed to be less efficient than last season. Well, not Evan Mobley, necessarily. Evan Mobley has seen a tick up in scoring. I think the story is basically this. Jared, two-way dominance through most of this. He's been very good. He's been the most steady performer. I'm very happy. Evan Mobley, I think he's been very good defensively. The one thing that's sustaining for this Cavalier team is the defense. And that's why I would push back on people look at net rating. This is my problem with advanced analytics to some extent, by the way. I love data as much as the next person, but I think if you've watched these four games and you've convinced yourself that the reason none of our shooters have made their basket is because it's Evan Mobley and Jared Allen's fault, lose me on that. If you've arrived at the conclusion due to George Niang's net rating being better than Evan Mobley's, if you've arrived at a point where you think to yourself that what we need to do to unlock this team is take Evan Mobley off the floor, I could not more vehemently disagree. Our defense is not the big problem. Yeah, we could do better to shut off some second efforts and limit runouts and things of that nature. But the bench, Orlando's bench in Cleveland, was 2-for-18 from outside the arc. They went from that to shooting 40% in Orlando and making 10 three-pointers over that two-game span. That's ridiculous. Not to mention, they're the leading bench scoring unit in the NBA playoffs. Now, numbers aren't everything. We've had four games where the bench is going to get a lot of minutes because they've been runaways in both directions. But still, my fear coming into this series was essentially that I look at the bench as basically a given. I didn't expect Orlando's bench to no-show in Cleveland because I think so much of Joe Ingles. And while I hate Mo Wagner, his effort has always been something that's consistent. Jonathan Isaac, super impactful. Cole Anthony, capable of turning it on. But what we saw was just objectively horrible shooting in Cleveland, and hopefully we will again tonight. But my faith is not in shaking up our rotations to lean heavier on bench players who have not performed thus far. I am not of the belief that the solution is to lean more on the guys who have gone 4-for-28 from three-point line. You've obviously all heard that stat with George Niang and Max Strus. Now, we have to shoot more threes. I agree there. The pathway to do that does not have to be put all the shooters on the floor at once. You know, I have my issues with pace, certainly. We're middle of the pack in this playoffs, and we're playing at a faster pace than Indiana, who was second in the regular season to Washington and the second most prolific offense. It's more the idea that in this defensive slugfest, the more opportunities we can generate before we give Orlando time to get back and to load up, the more we can get in transition, it would make life tremendously easier. But the go-to for so long when, you know, finding blame with our pretty mediocre offense has always been, well, it's the too big construction. I don't think that holds true. Those two together analytically are, I mean, we're still a negative net rating, but just ever so slightly. What I'm seeing is a pretty stellar defensive effort that simply cannot sustain even worse offense than we got against the New York Knicks last year. You can't blame the too big lineup when Yang is out there shooting 9%. And I've seen people react to the ass kickings that we take by saying, well, you got to change things up. We got to go small ball. We got to, you know, do the stretch lineups. This is the one time where I would say, I think taking that tact would play into our opponent's hands. Even our standard core four lineup should be markedly better shooting from outside the arc than their starting unit. Our bench has to produce more. Now, Isaac won't get the headlines, but to see him go from double-digit points and four steals to 0 points and seven personal fouls in Orlando it's pretty crushing, especially, you know, because I already have my anxieties about the payroll situation and knowing he's heading to restricted free agency. Maybe this is a silver lining. Maybe this is some positive news to come from an, how can I say this optimistically, uneven playoff performance. This will sound heartless, but if we're forced to watch the guy turn into a pumpkin, as Carter Rodriguez would put it, on the road, if we bow out for some reason, which again, don't think is going to happen. I'm sticking to my Cavs in six prediction. But if it happens, 3.5 points a game on sub 40% shooting, that to me doesn't get the, you know, pre-free agency extension. That gets the go find an offer sheet. That gets the PJ Washington treatment, where you stretch it out and eventually you come to terms on something that both sides can live with. And that may sound heartless. And again, I don't really want to focus on the offseason here, but I'm a cup half full of piss kind of guy. Fingers crossed, that's a conversation that we're not having for another few weeks here. But it's just more about the inconsistency between home and road. That should happen with a team that's led by two guys on their rookie contracts. That should not happen when your two biggest free agent acquisitions have more than 90 playoff games of experience, nearly 100. And in a perfect world, whatever the bench gave us would be gravy. But we need to narrow the disparity of their role players to our players because our starters are scoring just 2 points more per game than them. And we would probably be the lowest scoring starting unit in the NBA playoffs, if not for the fact that Orlando was able to rest so many of their guys in these last two blowouts. The high point for this Cavalier bench was that first half where Karras and Isaac both scored 8 points, and we had 16 bench points in the first half. Do you know what we finished game two with? 18. Just 2 bench points the entire second half. They scored more bench points in either of their home games than we did collectively in game one and two. Mo's picking up steam. Isaac's picking up steam. Wendell Carter Jr. finally scored in double digits in game four. I don't expect to win bench points, but I definitely think we need to narrow the margin. The three-point shooting has completely flipped. We are the worst three-point shooting team in the postseason at under 27%. The Magic were the worst three-point shooting team during the regular season, and they're 12th to our 16th in the playoffs. They made 17 of 72 attempts in games one and two, 24%. And this is the team that we are looking up at. We come up with all sorts of creative ways to make our analysis deeper than you have to make shots. But that is the single most important thing. You can opine about the lack of offensive range that a Jarrett or an Evan play. You can crush JB for his rotations, for sticking with guys who aren't performing, for not putting people in a position to succeed. But ultimately, on a roster with three guys who have made all-star appearances, it's on them to make shots. And that's not to absolve JB of anything. But honestly, I think it's wasted time critiquing JB. I don't think anyone here is thinking that he's going to survive this unscathed, given that we just spent a whole season talking about the importance of, you know, learning through failure and progression, only to have the disparity be worse so far. A lot would have to change in this, the remainder of this series and whatever comes of next series. But the tea leaves are already starting to trickle out there between Fedor and Joe Vardin. And these are like, it's just a wild turn from the vibes of game one and two to where we sit now after game four. And I'm a hypocrite. I mean, clearly, I'm not in the best place, but I am not telling you about patronizing chest taps and playing body language expert and putting that into an article. That's just, I don't even know what to say about that. But I'm still confident we're going to win. That's the thing. For everything that I'm saying on this podcast, which is, you know, presenting you with fairly discouraging data, it's still 2-2, and we still have two chances at home where we played our best. So I still feel very confident we're going to win. If anything, the song I made at the beginning of this podcast, it sounds conciliatory, like I believe I'm going to be on the wrong end of the, you know, enemy of the pod discussion. I don't really believe that. I'm just setting it up so when I take an even larger victory lap later, I can say, what? I was fair and balanced. I shit on myself right before game five. So to put a bow on this, I guarantee victory.
It's a Fear the Fro. Oh! Podcast lock.
Ooh. That's right. Rest easy. Close your eyes. Take a nap before the game. It's in the bag. Now, I briefly want to discuss Joel Embiid and the New York Knicks, the Sixers in the Knicks series, probably the one I'm the most dialed in on outside of our own Cavalier series, because coming into the playoffs, I I loathe the Knicks. There's no dispute about that. It's mostly their fan base, who I found insufferable after beating us last year. The most arrogant fan base to win one round and then be dipped out by the Heat humanly possible. Well, this season, I thought what I wanted was the Philadelphia 76ers to topple the Knicks. And yet, in watching the games, I told myself the same thing when LeBron left, right, to go to Miami. And then I found myself rooting for Big Z and rooting for LeBron, despite how he had abandoned the Cavs. I don't know. It was just ingrained in me in a way which I couldn't shake. I didn't want him to get a title, but at the same time, if LeBron left the Cavs and didn't win a title, I think I would have felt worse that all of that pain and suffering he inflicted upon us as Cavs fans when he departed was for nothing. So it wasn't logical, but similarly, when I've been watching these games between the Knicks and the Heat, I find myself pulling for the Knicks. And there's grifters on both sides. Joel Embiid is in a class of his own as far as grifting goes and free throws. And he's got a 21 free throw game in here and multiple questionably dirty plays. It's not as if Jalen Brunson doesn't sell a hell of a lot of stuff himself. But good God, if I haven't come away from this series realizing that I hate Joel Embiid far more than I hate the Knicks, because I delighted in watching him no-show in the fourth quarter without Mitchell Robinson on the floor or without Isaiah Hartenstein on the floor. Watching that man pass up a wide-open 8 to 10-foot jumper to drive into traffic and get stuffed by a guy 6 inches shorter than him, oh, I delighted in it. And adding Lowry has made them even more hateable. Talk about two grifty manipulators. Even Oubre is starting to get Oubre was never super likable, but here's a complete black hole of a player who did nothing but fire up questionable looks in Charlotte, talking about how Jalen Brunson's 47 is really not actually that impressive because he took 34 shots.
34 shots? I mean, yeah, he's a great player. Great, great, great player. I love playing against him. I love his game. You know, he has a lot of fundamentals and skill set to his game. But, you know, anybody shoots 34 shots that has skill and that's a great player, you know, they're going to be able to do well.
Just to put that in a little perspective, Kelly Oubre has never shot 34 times in a game. So there isn't a comparable. But the most shots Kelly has ever taken in a game is 27. Now, Jalen scored 47 on 34 shots. Kelly scored 28 points on 27 shots. That's a 37% shooting percentage. So to act like shot volume equates to a transcended performance seems a bit disingenuous, considering the source. The game before his 47 points, Jalen shot 27 times and scored 39 points to go along with 13 assists. So Kelly Oubre downplaying Jalen Brunson's stats as just some sort of product of volume is hilarious, especially considering, I mean, he's probably shaded by the fact that Joel Embiid can score 50 points on 10 shots and 8 million free throws, 21 free throws in that 50 burger. He's averaging 15 free throws a game in this playoff series. That's the same number Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets entire team get per game. Now, one more story we have to touch on. Dan Gilbert's professional nemesis, Matt Ishbia, owner of the Phoenix Suns. Do you recall this voicemail?
Hey, buddy, hope you're doing good. Just want to say I love you. We fucking took those cocksuckers down. Fuck them. And we're going to keep fucking sticking it to them forever. Fuck those guys. We're number one. We kick the shit out of them. You're number one. We're all number one together. And fuck them. I fucking hate them with all my heart. And we're going to keep kicking their ass every fucking day. That's why I was here fucking at 4 a.m. again today. I don't give a fuck. We're going to keep kicking ass. And so, love you, man. Let's fucking go.
I would love if Dan Gilbert was petty enough to leave his own voicemail. But I am curious what the tone of the voicemails being left for Frank Vogel or even James Jones is. Because, somebody's getting scapegoated. You can already see it in Shams Charania's articles about Frank Vogel. They're setting up a fall guy, despite all the news kind of indicating that Ishbia was the one who came in as the new owner and decided to go all in. And it has blown up spectacularly. And for the lights too bright comment for Jared Allen, I always thought it was ridiculous that a man got criticized for just being candid about what the whole world saw play out. I think far more embarrassing is the Devin Booker comments from before the season, which could not look more foolish with the benefit of hindsight.
I mean, saying it respectfully, I don't know how teams are going to guard us.
The nice thing about all these high-profile teams failing is that it has made us largely invisible to the broad NBA world. But between what's happened with the Phoenix Suns and the Lakers getting eliminated tonight and the Bucks looking like they're going to get knocked off by the Indiana Pacers, there's going to be less games to distract with and more eyeballs will shift to our series, which potentially could go the distance. You never know. But it's Cavs in six. I already said it. It's a lock. Now, I have a request. For those of you who are regular Fear the Fro listeners, get your comments in. Go to CavsPod.com. If there's a subject you want to talk about, something I've said that you vehemently disagree with, an axe you have to grind, CavsPod.com, the Talk to Bob button, it lets you record an audio voicemail, and I can incorporate that into the show.
Let's go, Cavs. Let's fucking go. Love you.
Let's wrap this one up with the song that I came in with, because you know what? I spent a fair amount of time on it, and it's only going to be relevant for a day, because the next one is going to be celebrating our triumph, not wallowing in misery. Am I right? Okay, let me just give me the 2 seconds. I'm just going to cue it. There we go.
This is our year, guys. I can feel it. Last year was humbling, but that was last year. This is a new year. We got veterans. We got toughness, mental fortitude. We can't be bullied anymore. So all aboard for the playoff redemption tour. Choo-choo!
When our team went down to Orlando, the Magic were in a 2-0 hole.
Looking good!
Now here we are, the series all tied up.
Damn it, damn it, damn it!
My redemption hopes look like they might die. And yet even worse,
I tried to tell you about Mobley, my guy.
Shut up!
Please not this again. You're going to make me cry.
Say it with me. Reprehensible.
Oh, fuck off.
So make threes or even twos.
I'd take one.
Do what you've been paid to do.
Score!
Anyone but Fro, they need to thrive.
Who takes the fall for this in Cleveland?
Don't care who is to blame. I just can't lose this way again.
I just don't like what I'm watching.
Please, God, just try to score.
Cleveland has to trade Mitchell this summer. And it's like in all caps and bold.
People like to say,
you know what this is?
This is a rock fight.
Well, I'm begging you, respond tonight. If we hit the road trailing 3-2, just kick in my teeth with a steel-toed boot. If I see one more net ratings post telling me which guy they suck the most, I will contemplate if I should end my life.
Obviously, the answer is a resounding yes.
So Donnie DG or Sam, Evan Max or Minivan, put it through the net, you fucking dolts.
How is Derek Favors doing right now?
Fear the Frozen apt name, the only guy who came to play.
Thank you, Bob.
And I'm your sad boy host.